Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour. Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Hill School of Wisconsin. The Law Hour is an educational service of public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Empty Harvest when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. That's if you're self-employed and you're paying that 15.3% tax. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 in pay and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 a second time? Now, you and I both know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security tax, and then they make you pay 17% of the same $50,000 in income tax, and that means that you pay 17% of the $7,650 two times. And that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and everyone else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Again, that number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, for more information about tax and status, you can also go to the website. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And then click onto the email and send us that email request. Do it right now before you forget. All right, last time we were reviewing the book called Empty Harvest. It's the connecting link between this thing of soil nutrition or soil health and your health. If you're sick, it's because you're not getting the nutrients that you need. You're not suffering from a Tambacore deficiency or a Nexium deficiency or an aspirin deficiency or a penicillin or some other antibiotic deficiency. You can live forever without those drugs. But you cannot live forever without, in fact, you can't even live for 70 years without these essential nutrients that we get from our foods. And this process here in America has been going on. The degeneration of our soils, the degeneration of our food has been going on for at least 100 years. Well, since about 1900. Now, the Food and Drug Administration was created for the express purpose of protecting us from these deficient foods or from these adulterated foods. But the people who were adulterating the foods took over the political process, and now they control the FDA. The FDA is like a mafia organization. It's a hit squad which protects Nabisco and ADM and Cargill and Kraft and the American Dairy Association. It's for the express purpose of establishing and then protecting a monopoly for profit. It's for money. The difference is we don't have to participate in it. You and I, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, can opt out anytime we want. Now, if you're still eating Oreo cookies out of the supermarket and drinking pasteurized and homogenized milk, and you're drinking fluoridated and chlorine-doctored water and bathing in it, that's a choice that you make. You live where you live, and you can move anytime you want. I did a series of programs here on strategic relocation. It's for the purposes of relocating when you need to. It's relocating to a safer place for your own safety, for your own well-being. I did that. I woke up one day and I said, well, where I'm living here is hazardous to my health, so I think I'm going to move. And I did. And my health is better for it. Now, there have always been watchdogs out there, and in this book, which is entitled Empty Harvest by Dr. Bernard Jensen and Mark Anderson, they are connecting the dots and telling you, well, here's the guy that did it to you. Here's the company, the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, in 1937, during Thanksgiving, put out ads in big multimedia magazines like Look and Life magazine. They said, hey, smoking aids your digestion. That was a blatant, bald-faced lie. But hell, you know, they're in with the establishment. They can do that. Dr. Royal Lee came up and he said, no, that's not true. And he was taken to court and threatened with jail if he didn't shut up. Kind of reminds me of the Catholic Church. And was it Leonardo da Vinci or Galileo? And one of them, I forgot who it was now, he said, hey, the earth revolves around the sun. And the doctrine of the church was that, no, the sun revolves around the earth. And I think it was Galileo who discovered the telescope. And he said, no, I can look out there and I can monitor and I can see and I'm reporting what I'm seeing here. And they threatened him with death. They said, now listen, sucker, we'll excommunicate you, number one. Then we'll take you out because you're a heretic and kill you, number two. So he recanted. He said, well, okay, I was wrong about that, and I'm real sorry. And it's the sun that revolves around the earth. And after he made that confession in public, he turned to his friends and said, well, okay, but the earth is revolving around the sun nevertheless. I mean, that's where reality is at. Now, here in America, and I suspect probably in Western Europe to a lesser degree, but certainly Canada and Australia, we adopt these myths because, as Adolf Hitler once so adroitly explained or observed, he said, if you tell a lie often enough, people will believe it. You just keep repeating it. You just keep telling people that Camel cigarettes are good for your digestion and people will believe it. Not everybody. You know, there's always going to be a few iconoclasts out there that won't, but most people will. Most of the people. That's the broad majority of Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives. They'll believe that. That's what we observe in America today. Coca-Cola is good for you, and we drink a lot of it. Now, we noticed that over the past 20 years that as the consumption of soda pop doubled, the incidence of diabetes doubled. Nobody ever puts two and two together, and I don't expect truck drivers and plumbers and carpenters to connect these dots, but I would expect that the paid professionals at the Food and Drug Administration, those fellows, they ought to be able to connect those dots. Medical doctors should be able to connect those dots. And there's no doubt in my mind that the pharmaceutical companies, with all of their scientists who are spending billions of dollars with their experiments in the laboratories, all these smart people, you know, with letters after their names, those people should be able to figure that out. And they ought to report that to us ignoramuses down here at the lower levels, but they don't. And it makes all the sense in the world. Why would the pharmaceutical companies want to tell you that drugs don't work nearly as well as vitamin B1, B2, B6, and B12? That isn't good for sales. And you can get these vitamins out of food. And farmers, they don't get paid for producing nutritious food. They get paid for tons, not quality. They get paid for quantity. The quality is irrelevant. If a farmer is producing wheat and the wheat contains 7 to 13% protein, he gets paid the same as if that wheat contained 20 to 24% protein. He doesn't get paid for the protein content. He doesn't get paid for the vitamin and mineral content of that food. He gets paid by the ton. And it all pays the same. And it costs a lot more to produce nutritious food. That's why health foods cost more, because it costs more to produce it. But it produces a better result. Now, for instance, Americans are spending around $5,000 a year in their supermarkets buying food. And if they were buying wholesome food, they would probably pay twice as much. And Americans want cheap food. All right, so these Americans who buy this cheap food pay $10,000 a year for health insurance. Well, let's see, you're paying $5,000 for food and $10,000 for health insurance, that's $15,000 a year. I pay twice as much. I pay $10,000 a year for food, but I don't have any health insurance. I don't need it because I don't get sick. So I save $5,000 a year by staying well. So from my perspective in life, I think good, healthy, nutritious food is actually cheaper than the American cheap food, medical insurance, monopoly lifestyle. That's my conclusion. I came to that conclusion with taxes also. Here's what I figured out. The income tax takes 17%, Social Security takes 16%, 17 and 16 is 33, that's one-third of 100. Work it out. Try it yourself. 17 and 16, add them together, that's about one-third of everything we create and produce goes to taxes. On the other hand, the tithe is 10%. Now take 33 and put 10 under it with a minus sign and subtract the 10 from the 33, and I think you'll come up with 23. I figure that by paying my tithe of 10%, I save 23%. So instead of 67%, I get to add on to that another 23%, which takes me up to 90. Now, the average American, he works and makes 100%, gives 33% to the government, and lives on 67%. I work and make 100, and I pay 10% to God, and I keep 90% for myself. I have a 23% higher living standard than the average American by tithing rather than paying taxes. I think tithing is a better program than taxes, in the same way that I think that eating healthy, nutritious food is actually cheaper than buying cheap food from Tyson, ADM, and Cargill. Now, you can do what you want. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But it seems like to me that that's the more logical course, and it gives you good health to boot. And I don't like being sick. I'm very sensitive to pain. So going on, last time we were on page 47, we're talking about soil, the living source. Summarizing scientific research gathered from around the world, Dr. Lee said in 1950 that trace mineral deficiency, it is evident, can act also to impair hereditary transmission, as these trace minerals and determinants, that is the cell blueprints, are combined organically into protein linkages, and it is evident how the nature of these minerals in our foods are of vital importance. Compost gardening, organic gardening, and building up the organic material levels of the soil is here justified and its results are explained. I got to pause there for a moment and point out that 5% of American babies are deformed at birth. We have a 5% birth defect rate here in the United States. Now, in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, God tells us twice in those two chapters that we'll have no birth defects. Blessed shall be the fruit of your body. Now, boys and girls, when you eat nutritionless food, then the sex hormones and reproductive organs of your body are deficient. And when they're deficient, they produce deficient cells which are passed on to the next generation. And the next generation may turn out to be mongoloid, or it may turn out to be club-footed, cleft palate, or something else. When you have a birth defect, you have a nutritional deficiency. There's also one other cause to these birth defects, which is called toxicity, as we saw with thalidomide. God bless the drug companies, huh? They gave us thalidomide, and I don't know how many, but it's in the thousands of deformed babies back in the 1950s and early 60s. So just tuck that one away in your heart. Now, the roots of our immunity. To begin to understand the plant's immune system and its design of resistance to disease, just picture a plant growing in the soil. Among the roots of the plant grow offshoots called rootlets. Growing on the rootlets are little hair-like fungi called mycorrhiza. Mycorrhiza are fungus, yeast-type substances that are very delicate and potentially very toxic, similar to the tiny insect that has a concentrated poison. These little fungi, mycorrhiza, secrete small amounts of highly toxic chemicals. Mineral-rich soil is full of microbial life, and it contains millions of bacteria. The primary function of this microbial life in the soil is to break down anything that falls upon the land and to break down mineral deposits into available plant food. You might take an apple core and throw it on the ground. And then when you come back later, if an animal hasn't eaten it, it is decaying. You'll see it rot. Now, when you return later, you'll see that it's gone. The microbial life of the soil has returned it to Mother Earth. But the soil reclaims it in its elemental or component form. And this process is called the soil cycle. By analogy, the land does not want words. It wants the alphabet. If you drop words upon the soil, it breaks down into letters. The soil wants these elemental parts in order to reconstitute them into another life form. Now, these bacteria are extremely active, and the bacteria are busy breaking down organic matter to release these minerals. And although bacteria suffer from constant bad press, another stubborn fact is that the overwhelming majority of bacteria are good, healthy, friendly bacteria, beneficial bacteria, we call them. Why then doesn't the devouring bacteria attack the growing plant? And the reason that the plant is safe and its roots are not attacked by the bacteria is because of this substance called the mycorrhiza. It's this mycorrhiza, these mycorrhiza living among the surface of the plant rootlets, that are secreting this highly toxic protective substance that are antibacterial. They're called antibiotics. Can you say antibiotics, boys and girls? Now, can you think of an antibiotic that was found in a fungus? Ah, that's right, penicillin. In 1929, Dr. Alexander Fleming discovered this fungal secretion when he noticed that a bacteria specimen living in a dish culture medium had been destroyed by a spore of mold. When the mold had matured, the surrounding bacteria had died. Fleming had discovered the antibiotic penicillin. We call it the wonder drug. Anti means against and biotic means life. So antibiotic means against life. And we think that this is where life comes from, anti-life. Now, nature gave fungi and bacteria an interesting relationship. They are natural antagonists. They keep each other in check through their competition. Each has a realm within the earth kingdom that keeps the other in balance. Soil bacteria would otherwise attack the plant and break it down. But the plant has an immune system. The plant supports a fungus that secretes antibacterial substances that we call antibiotics. The plant, thus protected, is free to absorb the minerals that soil microbial life has released without fear of infection from soil-borne bacteria. These bacteria and fungus, as nature would have it, live in conflicting harmony. Not only have we found that these little mycorrhiza secrete antibiotics, but they participate in an impressively intelligent aspect of the plant as well. Now let's say the plant needs the comparatively rare trace mineral copper, but is living in minerally imbalanced soil. And let's say that there is an abundance of zinc and calcium and phosphorus in the soil, but very little copper. And it has been shown repeatedly that the mycorrhiza help the plant to make an intelligent selection. These rootlet fungi help the plant to chelate, that is, bind minerals to protein for absorption. This helps them to pick up the copper. So when the plant loses its mycorrhiza, it tends to get inundated by the minerals of abundance. The plant is then going to show some type of deformity or deficiency. This mycorrhiza helped the plant make an intelligent selection by chelating certain of the minerals and drawing them into the sap or protoplasm of these roots, and thus up into the chlorophyll, which is the blood of the plant. All right, so now if you got the picture over here, you see that the plant then is absorbing the minerals out of the soil. The plant now being mineral rich. Now it has the mineral in it, so when you eat the carrot or you eat the potato, it has these chelated minerals in the plant. You then absorb these chelated minerals through the digestion process in your body. Now, nature has an excellent means of preventing inferior plant growth. Maybe a plant is, for some reason, weak, puny. Maybe it's been cut and is bleeding. Plants bleed chlorophyll, the way veins bleed blood. Maybe it's been damaged by a hailstorm, or perhaps there was a week of 110 degree days, and it's been heat stressed. Anything that you can think of that would physically injure it. Now, nature is a perfectionist and it does not like second-rate products. Thus, the mycorrhiza will actually turn against and attack the plant if it is unfit for consumption. So you see a plant that wilts or that it dies. It's the natural process. God has designed into plants, just like he's designed into animals, a process by which the inferior plants and animals that are less able to survive, they die, they're eaten up. Some wolf comes along and kills the weak out of the herd of elk. Or you've got cotton boll worms, or you've got corn borers that come in and they attack the weak plants, not the healthy ones. So now watch what the farmer does. The farmer goes out into his cornfield and he looks around through the ears and he says, "Oh my God, I have an infestation of corn borers." So he goes down to the ag shop and he says, "Hey, listen, I've got corn borers." So the guy down at the ag shop says, "Well, here's the chemical that you put on. It could be DDT or chlordane or 2,4-D or something. And they've got a poison for it." He says, "Go out here and you spray this on your field, and it'll kill all the corn borers." Now remember what these corn borers are out here doing. They are attacking and they're eating the sick plants because they're deficient in these vitamins and minerals. It's a design mechanism by God himself to protect you from eating these unhealthy plants that are deficient in these essential vitamins and minerals. So the farmer sprays his field, he kills all the corn borers. So now the plants all grow to maturity. Some of the plants have all of the vitamins and minerals that are needed, and some of them don't. The ones that don't would have been eaten by the corn borers, but we wanted to kill all the corn borers, and so we did. Now we have bins and bushels of foodless food, which is being characterized in this book called Empty Harvest. That's an empty harvest. And that's what we're doing here in America, Canada, Australia, and Western Europe. And then we do this by our soil management practices. This is what we want to do. This is modern agriculture, modern medicine. It's the paradigm that we've adopted. And it's profitable for farmers. It's profitable for DuPont and chemical companies. It's profitable for pharmaceutical companies. I mean, look at all the people that profit from all of this bad food. There's lots of money to be made here. Now, healthful, nutritious food, the kind of stuff that's got all the vitamins and minerals, it doesn't have that kind of profit in it. That's why we have a Food and Drug Administration and an American Medical Association or Society. That's why we have an American Cancer Society. That's why we have Jerry's Kids and the Muscular Dystrophy Telethon. It's because of all the money that sickness and disease generates. Like war generates profits. It generates money. It gets people excited. People can go in and testify before Senate and House subcommittee hearings and get laws passed to make money. Good health doesn't have any purpose for testimony before a committee hearing. Peace doesn't have any dividends from which we can profit by getting this or that law passed. The law enforcement growth industry is profitable, but if we don't have crime, there's no profit in honesty. There's profit in crime and theft, but there's very little or no profit in honesty. So why would we want to teach the Ten Commandments in our public schools? Because people that are out burglarizing your house and stealing your cars, that requires policemen to go out and protect you from all these bad guys. So we promote crime because it's got profit. We promote disease because it's got profit, and we promote war because it's got profit. But I don't see where sickness, disease, war, crime, and profits has anything to do with you and I, Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives, down here at the bottom of the pile. It's got a lot of profit for Kellogg Brown and Root, for Halliburton. It's got a lot of profit for the law enforcement growth industry and the American Medical Association and Merck and Pfizer, but it doesn't do anything for us. We're the guys that have to pay the taxes. We're the guys that have to go out and work and produce the goods and services to generate the taxes to pay for all of this nonsense, don't we? So the mycorrhiza will actually turn against the attack, and it will attack the plant if it's unfit for consumption. This is a protective self-destruct mechanism. If you see a fungus growing up the stem or leaf of a plant, it is a self-produced fungus. There was something inferior about the quality of the plant. It's a self-destruct mechanism in which nothing gets wasted. Nature grows a fungus on the inferior plant. The plant dies. The plant is broken down by microbial life and begins again until we get it right. And like a recycled center, nothing is lost, nothing is wasted. When the plant dies, only the outer form changes. The material comes back and is reused in the soil in the next generation of plants. Now that's the natural process. Now we have a modern approach to agriculture. And that modern approach to agriculture over here produces bins and bushels of foodless foods and billions of dollars in profits. We'll take a look at it right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let's take a look at the modern approach to agriculture. How does today's high-tech farmer deal with weak plants? The modern farmer looks down from his air-conditioned cab of his $100,000 John Deere tractor and says, "What's this?" He sees a little fungus growing on the plant, and he says, "Well, we ain't going to put up with this. We know how to deal with the likes of you." So he gets in his pickup. He heads down to the agricultural chemical supply station, and he returns loaded with barrels of chemosterilants with skull and crossbones on their labels. Now he's ready to treat the plants. In the back of his pickup truck are barrels with labels that say things like, "Use extreme caution. Do not inhale. Use in well-ventilated areas. Do not allow any contact with skin or hair. Do not dispose of near water. Keep away from livestock and feed. May cause blindness or death if taken internally. Read all instructions carefully. Federal law requires application in accordance with labeled data. And then he thinks, this looks pretty good. Let's apply this to our growing food. Now remember the more than 3,500 people who were killed in Bhopal in India, 2,000 of whom died overnight, and the 200,000 more who were maimed? Well, these people were the victims and were exposed to the deadly seeping of an insecticide, methyl isocyanate, MIC. This tragedy, the worst industrial accident in the world to date, took place in an insecticide plant, and the people were killed by a chemical that was actually meant to be sprayed on food to be consumed by animals and humans. But even this was not the largest number of human beings killed by an insecticide. Do you remember Zyklon B, a patented German insecticide, was the instrument of Nazi genocidal psychosis used to gas millions of victims to their agonizing deaths at 30-odd concentration camps throughout Europe between 1939 and 45. Remember, insecticides are designed to kill. Now, as a farmer applies the fungicide to the plant, it drips down the plant and descends into the soil. So he returns in 4 or 5 days, and the fungus is now off the plant. The soil is now sterilized, and there is no mycorrhiza. There is no more fungus on the plant, no more fungus on the rootlets, and there is nothing to prevent the bacteria from saying, come on, let's eat this plant, let's eat this beet. So then what's the next symptom that the farmer is likely to see? Well, the plant becomes feverish as it begins to develop bacterial infection. Plants develop infections just like human beings do when the bacterial count gets too high. The plant is now the unprotected target of all of this bacteria, which is now out of balance. So the farmer, he goes back to the ag store and he gets a new drug. This one is a complement to the fungicide. It is often applied with the fungicide. So he sprays it on to kill the bacteria that is breaking down the plant. He's already killed the mycorrhiza and killed the bacteria subsequently attacking the plant. So now the plant is not absorbing minerals properly and the soil is not making minerals available. The plant has lost its resistance from below. The soil ecosystem has broken down. Nature now calls upon the next line of defense, the above ground sanitation squad, which is now called the insects. So, I don't want to produce second-rate products, says Mother Earth, a perfectionist. So, if you've destroyed my first line of defense in the soil, and you're still trying to get me to produce second-rate goods, I will send aphids, I will send grasshoppers, I will send mutant bugs that you ain't seen nothing yet. And the bugs say, we don't care what type of drugs you put on us, we'll just mutate. Because there's one thing about us insects. We don't care about being ugly. We don't take a long time to mutate because we don't care how we look. We just get the job done. Now, this is a losing strategy. Modern bugs just keep on getting uglier and meaner. Sometimes I see bugs that I've never seen before in my life, in areas that I've been in many times. I look and wonder, where did you come from? And there is confirmation that insect species have grown in spite of efforts to quash them. And according to the United States Department of Agriculture, this is the USDA now, crop loss due to insect damage has doubled since World War II. It's gone from 7 to 14%. Insecticide use is up 10 times what it was over that same period. Okay, now let me pause here for a moment and make an observation. I want you to notice that the amount of loss from 1945 till 1990 has doubled. Now, the reason that we started using these insecticides, remember, was because we were losing 7% to the insects. So somebody woke up one day and said, well, what we need is an insecticide that will kill the insects, which, remember, are there to destroy the unhealthy produce in the plants, designed by God himself. So we're going to defeat God. That's what we're going to do. Now, in the process, over the 50 years that's gone by, our losses have gone from 7% to 14%. And the amount of insecticide that we now use to hold our losses at 14% is 10 times more pesticide. In 1945, we went through the fields and we sprayed them once. Then we had to spray them twice. Then we had to spray them 4 times and then 8 times, and now we're up to 10. Well, in apple orchards, they got to the point where they had to spray them 14 times in the season. It cost more to spray the apples than they were getting for the apples. Now, what does that mean? Isn't that bankruptcy? Boys and girls, when it costs more to spray the crop than you're going to get for the crop, do you think we're going to continue on spraying the crop and producing the goods? So now look at the double whammy that we get here. First of all, because our soil is weak, we have a 7% insect loss. So we start spraying. And over time, our losses double to 14%, and the cost of spraying goes up 10 times. That doesn't sound like a very good program to me. Now, the insects are there for a reason. The bacteria and the fungi, they're there for a reason. They're designed into the ecosystem, which requires a land Sabbath. It requires that once every 7 years, we let the land rest. It's the design mechanism by the master engineer. He said, hey, listen, the land has to rest once every 7 years so that the fruit on the tree falls on the ground and rots and produces the organic material that the bacteria and the fungi are going to eat for the next 6 years while they're doing their job producing the minerals out of the hard rock, which the plant then needs to assimilate into the plant so that we can get all of the vitamins and minerals out of it so that we can have good health. Ah, but we said, no, no, there's no profit in that. Boys and girls, there is not profit in good health. It may be profitable for me and you down here at the bottom, but it's not profitable for food producers, manufacturers, wholesalers, distributors. They don't make profit off of that. Now, when I was a kid, there weren't any supermarkets. None. Zero. The closest thing that we had to a supermarket in Eureka, California in 1940 was a store called Safeway, which was about the size of a good-sized Circle K today. That's what they called a supermarket in 1940. We had little stores. And people, when they bought things, they bought them in bulk. You know, when people bought meat, they bought a half a cow. Or they bought a pig. Or they raised chickens in their backyards. Harry Connick was still pasturing cows in the city limits of Eureka, California in 1950. That's when they outlawed them. He was producing pure raw milk in 1950 at 17th and H Streets in Eureka, California in 1950. Can you believe it? Well, that was competition. And the big manufacturers, you know, they've got money, so they send lobbyists to lobby the legislature to outlaw raw milk because it's a competitive factor in the marketplace, and we want a monopoly. So we used to get our food down here at the local store, or we would buy it from farms direct, or we would buy it from people called butchers. There were actually stores that were called butcher shops. And you'd go into the butcher shop, and you'd say, well, I'm about out of meat. I need you to sell me. It was usually down at the locker plant. Because we didn't have refrigerators in 1945. I know somebody's going to say, why, you lying sack of dung? Why, we had refrigerators back in the 1920s. Yeah, that's true. They invented refrigeration back in the 1880s. A guy by the name of Sutro invented it for the mining industry out in Virginia City, Nevada. But that didn't mean that everybody had a refrigerator. Rich people had refrigerators. We weren't rich people, and we didn't have a refrigerator. First time I saw a refrigerator was in 1947. First time I seen one. Had ice boxes. We had coolers. We had ice houses downtown, and you went downtown, picked up your meat, and rode the bus back home to fix dinner. We didn't have refrigerators. Now, the process that we have adopted over here is called a losing strategy. And this losing strategy is now to the point where we've got what we call genetically modified organisms to stretch the rubber band a little tighter. But at some point in time, that rubber band is going to break, to use a metaphor, you know. And so if you think this is an overstatement, consider the following. According to the World Health Organization, malaria-bearing anopheles, mosquitoes, that are now immune to the pesticide used to control them, called DDT, have existed all over the world for many years. The World Health Organization distributes maps on which they color in certain sections of the world where there is virtually no control of malaria, even where extraordinarily toxic concentrations of DDT are applied. These mosquitoes begin to develop immunity to DDT, and within just a few years of its agricultural introduction after World War II. By June of 1956, the World Health Organization Executive Board issued this foreboding statement. The conclusion was that the development of resistance to insecticides has become a serious public health problem. 32 countries have reported insect resistance to DDT and other new insecticides. So the reason we have to keep coming up with newer and more potent insecticides is because the insects mutate and become resistant to the old strains. Same thing's happening to antibiotics in gonorrhea and syphilis. We now have super gonorrhea strains that eat antibiotics for lunch or dessert. Now what are you going to do when you come down with VD? See, now the logical solution to this is, well, if you'd practice the law that says thou shalt not commit adultery, you wouldn't get VD. And if you don't get VD, then you don't have the disease, you don't need the antibiotic. Somebody says, but that's not realistic because people are going to practice adultery. Well, okay, let them. You know, you don't have to get out here and beat your drums, you know, to get people to be moral. There's a natural law out here that regulates this already. VD is the natural regulator for adultery, in the same way that AIDS is the natural regulator for sodomy. You know, the average sodomite now is dying at age 39 to 45 from AIDS or some other infectious disease, infectious or degenerative disease. Their lifespan is cut by about half, and it's all automatic. Hell, it's like flying an airplane on automatic pilot. Just sit back and relax. The airplane's going in the right direction, and the buzzer will go off when we're approaching Honolulu. Now, of course, people, you know, like Kevin Trudeau, they get excited and they say, well, we got to save all these people. God's out here busily killing them all. And then Kevin Trudeau comes along and says, well, we got to save them. I'm just a reporter. I don't have any mission. I'm not here trying to save these people one way or the other. I'm here to report facts. You got a choice to make here, partner. Now, you can follow the agricultural program, and you can spray the DDT and the chemicals on your plants to kill the insects, or you can concentrate on developing healthy, nutritious soil so that the insects don't eat the plants to start with. Now, I've got a garden down here. I've got some raised beds. We don't use any chemicals here. We don't use any sprays. We use companion planting, and we use soil building techniques. And you know, I'm one of those farmers, when I see insects on plants, I say, well, those insects are my friends. That's right. When I see a worm in an apple, I say, good, that worm, he's my buddy. He's eating the apple, which is unfit for human consumption. Now, you just take a look at an apple tree, and you'll see, you know, there may be 1,000 apples on this apple tree, 500 apples. And out of the 500 or 1,000 apples, maybe 5% of them have worms on them. 5%. The worms don't eat all of the apples. They only eat the sick ones. The apples that you and I don't want to eat anyway because they're nutritionally deficient. Insects are not our enemies. Insects are our friends. Bacteria are not our enemies. Some bacteria cause disease. Some bacteria, rather than cause disease, appear to clean up like a buzzard. Now, when you see a buzzard eating on a dead animal, do you say, let's kill all the buzzards because the buzzards are killing our sheep? The buzzards aren't killing the sheep. They're down there clearing out the carrion. They're cleaning up the dead waste. The bacteria, boys and girls, aren't causing your diseases. Your diseases are being caused by starvation. And the bacteria are there to clean up the waste from the malnutrition. That's what's going on. Now, of course, that doesn't sell the drugs, and it doesn't sell the medicines and the doctors. There's no money to be made in that kind of a health program. But I'm just here to tell you that if you want good health, it's available. It isn't something that's way off someplace that's unheard of on top of a mountain in Tibet. It's right here in downtown Los Angeles. It's right here in downtown Miami, in Isabella, Missouri. Hell, it's everywhere. As the book of Proverbs says, you know, wisdom cries out. It isn't hidden under a rock someplace. It's crying out. Now, there's leadership from abroad. You know, recognition of these points come not a moment too soon to rescue the agricultural life of populous Indonesia. In 1989, Indonesian President Suharto, by government decree, banned at least 57 organophosphate pesticides, and he declared that the rice fields had become more infested with predator pests, such as the rice paddy destroying brown plant hopper, whose natural predators, the good guys, had been killed by all of the chemicals. This is the first major producer country to take such action. The government of Sweden, citing environmental and health concerns, has pledged to reduce pesticide use by 50% over 5 years beginning in 1989. I think that the Swedes will find that this approach is a bit like attempting to quit smoking by cutting down. There will always be a new bug, and at a huge environmental price. We may gain a thin edge, but we'll always lose in the end. Originally, DDT was applied to cotton for the destructive pest called the boll weevil. We're not supposed to eat cotton, although now I notice people use the oil of cotton seeds, which are inedible. But they soon started using DDT on food, and today, when you buy third world produce, you often get it on your tomatoes and vegetables and meat. By the time the United States Food and Drug Administration, that's the FDA, discovers that people will have consumed millions of tons of contamination. And the United States now imports about $40 billion of food annually. Although naturalists have been laughed at for years as alarmists, this contamination was recently the page one topic of the Wall Street Journal. The article reports that crop sprayers in the third world often spray the fatal pesticide DDT or its chemical cousins from airplanes right onto the workers in the fields. And sadly, this story was not a third world exclusive. The National Cancer Institute confirmed in July of 1988 that environmentalists or what environmentalists have said for decades, that after years of testing, it is proved that the main chemical agent in some 1,500 pesticides, 2,4-D, is a cause of cancer in humans. 2,4-D, cause of cancer in humans, particularly the American farmers who have used it enthusiastically since 1948. 60 million pounds are applied to United States crops annually, mostly corn and wheat. In your local hardware store, it is sold under various brand or trade names as a house and garden pesticide and weed killer, in spite of the National Cancer Institute's findings. The United States Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, has issued no change on the danger status of 2,4-D. I mean, you people go into the lawn and garden store and buy this stuff and spread it on your lawns. Then you go out and lay and roll and play in your lawns or on your lawns. And you absorb these chemicals and pesticides off of your lawns and flowers and plants. And then you wonder why you've got Parkinson's disease, Mr. Fox, Mr. Michael J. Fox, you wonder why? We're exposed to 89,000 common chemicals in our environment here in the United States. We produce tens of thousands of chemicals, but we're exposed to 89,000 of them routinely. And the two biggest culprits are fluoride in your water and chlorine in your water. And just taking a shower is equal to drinking 2 quarts of chlorinated water. That's what you absorb through your skin. And you call that healthful? You wonder why we have cancer in America, muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, and Parkinson's disease? You wonder why? You know, if you had healthy, nutritious food and your immune system was up to snub, you could probably absorb a whole lot more of those poisons and chemicals and get away with it. But the combination of this double whammy of poisons on the one hand, which weakens your body and your immune system, coupled with the immune suppressant of starvation, is the double whammy that we're unable to overcome. I'm out of time again, kids. We've got to leave it right there. So let me remind you that the Law Hour, an editorial review, is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you by the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tonight. Same time, same station. Back home, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.